Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
While there are things in this plan I dislike intensely, and I do, there are also things in this plan that I think are grand slam home runs for the American economy and for the future competitive position of our country. So we're now at a time when we have to decide. I understand not necessarily at this moment or today, because other members have not yet had a chance to fully review the plan.
Senate Budget Committee Chairman Democrat Kent Conrad holding his nose yesterday, but promising to vote yes on President Obama's Deficit Reduction Commission proposals to cut $4 trillion from the growing national debt by the year 2020. We have a chance now to speak with the former chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, Pete Domenici, who happens to be co-chairing his own bipartisan deficit commission, which is out with a report that many Democrats like a little better, with items including some economic stimulus now and a more even balance of tax hikes and spending cuts to balance the books. The other co-chair of this commission is former Clinton budget director Alice Rivlin. The commission was formed by the Bipartisan Policy Center. That's a think tank that promotes centrist views. This is still plenty controversial on both sides of the aisle, with proposals that include turning Medicare into a voucher program, means testing Social Security, and introducing a national sales tax. Pete Domenici was a Republican member of the Senate from New Mexico for 36 years through 2008, when he did not run for re-election. Also with us is a Democratic member of this bipartisan commission, Joe Manarek, a former chief economist of the House Budget Committee. Mr. Manarek and Senator Domenici, thank you very much for coming on WNYC today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much. I just want to, before we start talking, correct one thing you said.
Sure.
Not by way, I don't want to be argumentative, but you said we means tested Social Security. I don't think that's a fair statement.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Does your plan, Mr. Manarek, call for a reduction in benefits for people making over $40,000 a year who are on Social Security, something to that effect?
First of all, Social Security is means tested now. We have a progressive benefit formula that provides a higher replacement rate for people with lower wages than it does for people with higher wages. We also have in the law today a provision that subjects Social Security benefits for upper income beneficiaries to the individual income tax, which is itself progressive.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to look at that, you could, if you chose, characterize that as being means tested. What we have done in the recommendations of the Bipartisan Policy Center's task force is to make adjustments in Social Security benefits that do reduce benefits more for upper wage beneficiaries than for lower wage beneficiaries. But means testing has become a code word, and I think if people look at the system the way it operates today and look at our recommendations, they will come to the conclusion that what we're doing is eminently reasonable in terms of making sure that Social Security will be there for our children and our grandchildren and for decades to come.
I think there's so many things in this plan that, let's just say, we don't believe we have means-tested Social Security, and we think we can save Social Security solvent, make it solvent for 75 years and remain solvent at 75 years with the new formulas we've used. And we think when studied by those who are most concerned, they will find that it's fair and we don't have to mandate an increase in age to make this program solvent.
Okay, so fair
that's
enough.
That's where we're at. And let's move on to many of the other good things in this plan and in the plan that the president's people put together. This is a big day, a big week for budgeteering, because the two gentlemen who are representing the president in an executive, in a president-appointed commission, have come up with a number of really good ideas. We came up with a number of good ideas, and one of the big differences, we'll start off with it, is that the BPC plan, that is the Bipartisan Policy Center's plan,
your plan,
has a bipartisan consensus of the 19 members that were there. They are bipartisan. And this plan was approved by them after months of study and debate, give and take. As Americans, they said, we think we've got to give and come up with a plan that will solve this budget, this debt problem. And we're very thrilled that we did it, and we're very complimentary of the two gentlemen, one senator and one businessman, one ex-senator and a businessman, for what they've done to lay before the public some good ideas, positive, powerful ideas.
Okay. And America's really big budget buster is Medicare. I think everybody agrees on that. Expected to rise in cost, for example, and I don't even know how accurate these numbers are, but one version that I've seen is from about $400 billion this year to about $900 billion in 2020. And you didn't object when I read the introductory comments that included characterizing your Medicare proposal as turning it into a voucher program. How would that work?
Well, Joe, I'm just going to say we proposed major reform for Medicare in the future years. 5 years from now, a new plan would start, and Joe can explain it as one of the experts. But let me say we did many things in the health care field to reduce the cost of medical care in the future and push that curve down and make it so that we probably would be able to afford health care if these measures were adopted as part of a deficit reduction package.
Mr.
Joe, maybe you could explain the plan in terms of vouchers versus a continuation of the program as is.
Sure. Again, voucher is something that's another code word that people have used more as an epithet than as a description of what anybody does with respect to Medicare. Under the current Medicare system, about a quarter of people use plans other than the basic Medicare government plan. What we are trying to do, both for the Medicare population and also for the younger population, is to give people more choices. Many Americans are stuck with one health care plan that their employer happens to offer, and oftentimes that's a plan that doesn't meet their needs and it can be too expensive. What we would like to do for the Medicare population is to expand the number of options that people have and give them the opportunity to have a plan that meets their particular needs, like what we now call Medicare Advantage, but with more options that are better addressed to people's needs. One concern that people often mention with respect to giving people Medicare options is people have a certain amount of money that is provided to them to spend, but because they're sick, they can't find an option that private companies won't sell to them. That is a problem that is eminently solvable with a technique that is called risk adjustment. You create a large pool, and the participating plans must accept any comer. If they accept an applicant who is sick, they are compensated more. And we would use that kind of a technique to give elderly people more choices. And in particular, if you think about it, if you're 64 years and 364 days old and you have a good health plan that you like, why at midnight that night would you necessarily have to totally change your health care to shift over to the conventional Medicare program? We'd like to give people options to continue with health care that they like.
How would that control costs?
How would control costs? Let me take over a minute here. Joe, this is Pete Domenici taking over for Joe a minute. Joe, you got to make your answers a little shorter, okay? I'm going to say, in summary, we control Medicare costs in the short term, and we attempt to preserve Medicare for the long term and control costs while we do that. We have some control for Medicare costs in the short term and control Medicare costs in the long term. And all of those are detailed. It would certainly be great for our country if these were adopted as part of a deficit reduction plan.
Well, Mr. Minerick, give me one example of how you control costs. Because, for example, the president's plan is to use best practice incentives. in the health reform bill to coax doctors and hospitals not to be wasteful. I realize that's oversimplifying, but that's one major method that they use toward that. What does your program do to actually control costs of Medicare in addition to give people choices?
In a word, the difference is the president's approach is regulation. Our approach is competition. What we want to do is to give people alternatives with the opportunity to save money if they choose a less expensive health care plan for themselves. And by doing that, you tell the health insurers that they have to find every way they possibly can to deliver high-quality health care at a lower cost. That, we believe, is a good way to go. We also maintain the provisions in the recent Health Reform Act, which are designed to give guidance to insurers as to better ways to do business.
We would be very pleased, Mr. Host, to let you have an executive summary that contains the details on the differences between our plan and the Bowles plan, and obviously the difference in our plan versus what we have.
Yes, and we have it, and I'm just asking you to bring some of it out for the air, and I appreciate it. My guest is former Republican Senator Pete Domenici, a now co-chair of the bipartisan Alternative Deficit Reduction Commission, and one of his Democratic members, Joe Minerick, a former chief economist of the House Budget Committee. Senator, do you have a position on the Bush tax cuts as much of a budget buster as that would be?
Well, I'm not over there, and I don't have to vote on the Bush tax cut, but for certain, I would start with the proposition that we should not make the Bush tax cuts permanent, that's for sure. As a budgeteer, I think we must be aware of the fact that it has a terribly big impact on our ability to get the deficit under control with all this work we're doing. So we can't make it permanent. As a compromise, they ought to extend it. I'm just talking about my ideas. They ought to extend it for 2 years, the whole package, and many can make it clear that for budgetary purposes, they'll certainly be looking at the end of 2 years to have something significantly different for the American people so we can move ahead. We can't raise taxes right now because this economy is too fragile. And you should note, and your listeners should know, that we considered the economic problem to be we have to solve it along with the debt problem. There are two problems. And so what we did on the economy, we're the only ones that did it. We have a stimulus that just will work. Absolutely. We have a holiday for 1 year on the taxes that must be paid by over 130 million American workers who pay 6.2% of their paycheck. We give them a holiday from that tax for one full year, and the employers get a holiday for their portion for one full year. That means something like 130 to 140 million Americans and their employers during this year would receive something like $580 billion in weekly, biweekly, or monthly paychecks. And that should yield up to 7 million new jobs.
Which is a tremendous number of jobs, if true. And briefly, Mr. Minerick,
the low number is 2.5. That's good, too. It's between that. That's why I said the upper limit.
Mr. Minerick, we're going to run out of time in a couple of minutes, but why would you stimulate through a payroll tax holiday as opposed to some other way? Social Security is already underfunded, which is one of the main long-term deficit issues.
There is no problem with the general fund reimbursing the trust fund for the reductions in payroll tax receipts.
Over time.
Correct. There's no reason not to do that. This is a means of getting spendable income out to taxpayers to help to stimulate the economy. We are using the Social Security payroll tax as a vehicle to figure out how much and to deliver it. But you can still reimburse the trust fund, so the trust fund comes out whole.
And the point of it is, since we propose a new tax, the deficit reduction sales tax, when we put that into the equation, we have sufficient resources over the next decade to pay back the Social Security Trust Fund.
If that's
Will be able to do this unless they have new revenues, because you'd be adding to the debt. We don't add to the debt because we take away from the debt with a new sales tax.
That's a national sales tax on top of income tax rates. Why wouldn't that drag the economy down?
Because the income taxes are totally converted from where they are now to a streamlined income tax with only two brackets, lower brackets, in other words, lower income taxes. The programs attached to the income tax law for all of these expenditures where we're taking money from the federal government in these various things that are called, what do the average people call them, loopholes. We're getting rid of them. And at the same time, when you put in the things we put in our tax code, believe it or not, you have a progressive tax structure. Simple pro-growth tax system is what we're proposing. And according to all the expertise that's applied, it is pro-growth, and it is fair to every quintile of taxpayers, the poor, the middle income, and the rich. This is one we're not fighting.
Senator, we have 1 minute left, and you left Congress last year after 36 years in the Senate. You were there since the Vietnam War days and before Watergate.
So
year before last, after 2008. You've seen a lot of partisan conflict. Do you see things as more polarized today than ever before?
I see things more polarized today than they have been for most of my time in the Senate, but I believe that there's another fact of life, and that is that most of the time when America is in real trouble, leaders come to the party. Leaders come front and center and shake off their differences and decide to save America. That must happen here, or we will lose America. We'll become a second-rate power. Until and unless our leaders believe that and decide to do what the 19 people bipartisan did on our task force, that is to forget the politics and forget the ideology, decide what's the best plan you can do and vote on it without ideological pressure, you can't save America. I would close by saying it's imperative that the President of the United States get more involved. I believe we can have only one leader in a big war. This is a big war. I hope he joins in this fight in a very big way. His commission has done so. They have worked hard. Their program is worth looking at. Not a total big program like ours that does the whole thing, but it is certainly good. And I thank you for having us on. Let us talk to your audience about two things. The fact that we can solve the debt problem, one, and if we don't, America's in big trouble, and there is a hidden killer out there waiting to get us, and it stands a chance of breaking America and sending us into a second-rate position permanently. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Former Senator Pete Domenici and former Chief Economist of the House Budget Committee, Joe Minerick, members of the Deficit Reduction Commission, the private one, not the one impaneled by the president, but the one done by the Bipartisan Policy Center, a think tank. And we thank both of you very much for sharing your ideas. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll begin a December series on the brand new Encyclopedia of New York City. This is going to be fun. Stay with us.